Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. Everybody's in the house today except Izzy. Don't know where Izzy is. He probably hasn't had his coffee yet, but he'll be here. Big John has got his one of his representatives in the background there, you know, representing him. But what I wanted to do this morning is, and Jenny, I didn't forget about your song. I couldn't get it downloaded to get it plugged into the program to play it. So that I'm going to figure out a way to do that, and I'm going to feature you when I do that. And what I was referring to there, a young lady who overcame a lot in her life. And when I tell you all, I'm not going to go into her personal business, but when I say she overcame a lot, this young lady overcame a lot. She has seen rock bottom and dug deeper, and she pulled herself out, and she wrote a song, and she sent it to me. And, I mean, I'm not a big country music fan, but when I knew her, and I'm listening to the song that she wrote, and coming out of her heart, it was amazing. And so I'm going to probably next week, or I may even just do an absolute out of the blue Facebook Live with her on and do it. But I wanted everybody to hear that song because to me it represents that you can be everybody's trash. But if you believe in you and you do the work and you put the work in and you change yourself, you can become a treasure. You know, so I wanted her to know. I told her I was going to try to play it, and I couldn't get it downloaded and plugged in. But anyway, moving forward, like, good morning, Waco, Texas. Good morning, ATL. Good morning, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Glad everybody made it. Once again, if you're listening for the first time, we're not a Republican or Democrat show. We're not a Christian or atheist or Muslim show. It's not a gay or straight show. We're not pro-cop. We're not anti-cop. We're reality here, and if you would like to call in and be a part of the show and state your opinion, you can call 646-716-4621. Now, when you call, you'll hear the show. When you hear the show playing, if you want to chime in, you press 1 on your phone. That'll show me a question mark. Then I know you want to talk. You will hear colorful metaphors, aggravated adjectives, expletives, better known as curse words. I'll use them. There's some words we're not going to use the Lord's name in vain. We don't use the N-word unless it's in the context of a quote. And that's pretty much the ground rules. It's not incumbent that you agree with Stan or anybody on this panel. You can be diametrically opposed to us. We don't care. This is where we can all come and talk. And so, and for the trolls who feel like, well, I don't want to come on the show and actually say what I think, so I'll go on the Facebook Live. I'll warn you up front. Them folks over there hold a whole nother show. If you go over there crazy, I monitor it. I don't have time to interact in it. I usually get to it after the show, but I do read it and I watch what people type. And if you go over there acting crazy and somebody takes you out the box, don't cry to me later about it. I mean, that's just what they do over there because this is our show. So with that, we're going to say good morning to everybody. Get ready to get going, and I'm going to start out. Let me see. Who wants to go first? I'm not even picking this week. Who wants to go first?
Izzy does.
Izzy. Yes.
Hey, everybody. Morning. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Chief. You know how much I like to be on the spot. Glad to be here. Looking forward to this topic. I actually want to know what Joe has to say about it, given there was an auditor in Chicago who just kind of wrote a big long letter to the mayor and everybody about getting kind of kicked out of his job by the police there.
Yeah, I think I saw that also.
But yeah, happy to be here, ready to get started. Do we have trolls?
Oh, hell yeah. Do I need to post my inbox? Oh, we got them. They just ain't got the
man.
You ain't pissing nobody off.
Nobody hits me up.
Oh, yeah. Everybody who's trolling me, who hates me, who has an opinion of me, Izzy is the reason why, if y'all would, go Isidore Rodriguez on Facebook. Go find him. Trust me, he will reply. Izzy, what you drinking? That's clear. Is that ever clear? No coffee?
Moonshine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Chief said, yeah.
I like to start my mornings off proper.
There you go. What's up, John?
Looking forward to
hearing some interesting comments about this topic, man. You know, for those who don't know, I have a brother that's a police officer, and I think about him. I also think about regular citizens who are, because I don't want to get into the show too much, but there's, I guess, good and bad in this. There's the pros and cons, and I see a lot of bad coming out of this. So I look forward to listening to you guys who are the experts on this issue. Izzy, I know he's going to bring a lot of meat to this issue, so I'm just ready to go.
All right, Big Joe, what's up?
That was so emotional, man. Just here and waiting, willing to go. That's all I got tonight.
All right, brother. Big T, talk to me. What's going on?
Hey, good morning. Already started off. Had my turkey trot this morning and made it in just in time, out of breath, walking in. But yeah, I'm ready for this topic. You know, this kind of came up as a conversation between Stan and I, and some training that I had been doing with the police academy and recruits. And you know, it's not necessarily part of the state curriculum per se. You know, it's not something they'll be tested on as a recruit, but it sure is information that they need to have, because they will experience First Amendment R sometime and very soon in their career. So, you know, ready to hit it. There should be some interesting information today.
All right. Now, to everybody listening and they're thinking, what the heck is a First Amendment auditor? Okay, for me, and I'm speaking for Stan, I probably follow about 15 or 20 of them. And, you know, I think the thing with the First Amendment auditors for me, some of them are sincere and spend a lot of money on their equipment, and they believe in what they do. And some of them are, quite frankly, assholes. So when I look at what First Amendment auditors do and I look at what cops do, I really don't see a distinct difference there as far as public perception, because there are police officers I like and there are police officers I don't like. And I think these auditors are the same. You know, some of the ones that I think are really fair that I've listened to that go out, and these are basically the people that you see that go out with video cameras and they'll go into a public place and stay on public property and they film. And a lot of them are well-versed in the law for that particular area they go to. They know what they can or cannot do. And, you know, last week when this topic really came to mind for me was when the chief mentioned that he was doing training in the academy on traffic stops. And, you know, I asked him, I said, well, do they consider First Amendment auditors in that? And just the fact that he was able to say, yes, we have scenarios where we introduce that, that's progressive training, progressive thinking. Because in some of these videos, not all, there are some of these guys that will go out there with a camera to antagonize, piss off the police, cuss out the police, and they just do some things that are outrageous by my standards. But there are some who go out there and they're asking legitimate questions, and officers just go down this rabbit hole because they don't know how to engage to, can I help you? No, we're fine. We're just filming from a public position. Okay, what's your name and badge number? You know, Mason, 224. Okay, thank you. Anything else? No. Okay, have a good day, sir. Leave. But a lot of them stay. And I'm going to play a quick clip of just an example, and I'm not going to go through the whole clip so that some of you will have a better idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. You got an ID card, brother?
ID?
An ID card, yes.
Am I being detained?
Do you have an ID card?
Am I being detained?
I just need an ID card to see who you are.
Why?
Because you're on a federal installation.
I haven't crossed the restricted area. I'm still on public property. I'm just
taking
pictures.
No, you're not on public property. Turn that off.
No.
Turn it off.
No, sir, please, get away from me.
As soon as you get off that blacktop right there, you're on federal property.
Sir, I'm working on a story. We're bringing awareness, freedom of the press. Please stand back.
1104, can you dispatch JSO here, please?
Why are you trying to take my camera, sir?
Dispatch copies.
I'm just taking... JSO. Yeah.
I'm not trying to take your camera.
What about my Fourth Amendment?
What about your Fourth Amendment?
Am I being suspected of a crime?
Did I seize anything from you?
You're trying to... illegal search and seizure.
Did I seize anything from you?
You're trying to get my ID as soon as you got here.
I'm asking for your ID card.
Okay, and I can nicely refuse. I'm just working on a video. I'm not trying to cause any problems here.
All right.
Can I have your name and badge number? Isn't that part of your policy to identify yourself?
Nope, because you didn't give me your ID.
That's because I don't work here. You're the one that's at work. You're the one that has a gun. You're the one that's giving orders, right? So at least tell me your name. Okay, how long have you been working for the Navy Police?
That's not important.
Yes, it is, because you're trying to violate my rights right now.
No, I'm not violating your rights.
You're attempting.
Okay,
You're attempting. I'm not suspected of breaking the law.
Do you have JSO in route?
I haven't broken the law. I haven't done anything wrong. I'm working on a video peacefully. I'm going to talk to these gentlemen over here. Well, you're their boss, right? Right? So I don't know how this is going to work. Sir? I'm doing...
Stop right there, buddy.
Am I being detained?
Stop right there.
Am I being detained?
You're being detained as long as you're...
Under suspicion of what crime?
Photography on a federal installation?
What?
Are you sure of even what you want to say?
No. I'm in public property. Excuse
my... No, you're not.
Yes.
You are on federal property.
Okay, and what's my First Amendment right? I'm doing nothing wrong.
Your First Amendment right is freedom of speech, right?
And freedom of the press, correct?
No.
Yes.
Show your credentials for press, then.
Credentials, sir. It's the Constitution. It's the First Amendment, sir.
You're talking about freedom of the press. Do you represent the press?
I represent the people, yes.
Which people?
The people. We the people, sir. I'm not trying to be disrespectful,
okay.
But you're being disorderly right now, sir.
I am?
Yes, you are, because you're disturbing my peace. I've done nothing wrong.
And you're disturbing ours by filming.
Filming? Specifically, how am I disturbing your peace by taking pictures?
We're just going to get you... We'll get you taken care of by JSO.
What is that? I've done nothing wrong. Am I being detained? You're still... Sir, am I detained?
Okay. That goes on for another 30 minutes. And in this particular, I'll say, and I'm going to, when I do the YouTube, I will actually put that video up where you guys can see what you're hearing here on the show. The guy was not, I repeat, he was not on federal property. He was on public property. This guy knew his rights because he's one of the ones that particularly goes to an area and he will research the city ordinances before he does anything. And you got to see the video to get a full understanding of the facial expressions. And that was an example of the rabbit hole. The officer just kept going down this rabbit hole. The guy wasn't aggressive. I mean, he was just stating whatever, but the officer got suckered in. And I think it's because of lack of training and not knowing what to do or how to engage. He talked a lot about the press, and I saw you kind of do the eye thing. What were you thinking listening to that?
I mean, I'm thinking what you just said. I would have wished I could have sat in on that guy's First Amendment training at the academy. I see this a lot, though. Like, I just everything that happened is becoming far too commonplace. We're seeing a lot of these officers that are engaging with these people who 9 times out of 10 are not doing anything wrong, and the officer seems almost personally offended by what they're doing and makes the decision to get in their face and prosecute them or persecute them based on what they're doing without any real knowledge, apparently, of what he seems to be doing. And I don't understand. It's like a combination of poor training, poor education, but like gross ego and arrogance. Because that's all I'm hearing. It's just this guy's a big swinging dick and decides that he's going to tell this kid what's what. And that's another thing I don't understand. Like, even if you don't, what is with the cops today? And there's a camera in your face and there's the internet and it's going to go live immediately. Like, it's on you. What are you doing? Why are you sitting there and blatantly doing what you probably know deep down you shouldn't be doing? Like, the moment someone puts a camera on you, why wouldn't you decide to start acting a little bit better instead of just nose-diving into acting worse? there's no good end to this where you're going to come out on top, even if you're doing the right thing. Like, the moment that camera comes out, like, that's the thing. When I sat in on the NYPD training, they train you to deal with those situations to a certain degree. Like, they'll have, in the training courses, you'll be in a situation where you're doing something. They'll particularly have trainees come up and shove cameras in your faces and video phones and everything and start asking you questions and everything like that. And they're training you how to deal with that because they're trying to account for the fact that the moment that camera gets into your face, your adrenaline kicks in and you start acting out even higher to a certain degree. And they don't try and suppress that. But, I mean, as a member of press, I don't know what to think about that other than it's good that the kid brought the camera out and kept on filming, and that officer clearly doesn't know what he's talking about. And now he's, going to wind up on the news.
Okay. Now, Chief, let me ask you this. You know, with taking in line with what Izzy just said, let's go to the flip side of it. I have seen some of these auditors that are absolute assholes. They just are. They want a confrontation. They want a conflict because they want likes and clicks and YouTube fans. You know, there are some of them out there that are like that, and we're going to be unbiased on the show. We're just going to put it out. And I have seen some of these videos where the officer is 100% polite and respectful. And because they are 100% respectful and polite, and they are doing what they're supposed to do, they get cussed out, called names in order to, well, I've got to now invoke a reaction to get this video to the next level because this isn't what I expected. What do you think about those type of people?
Well, let's talk about this video. So it's obvious that we can hear what he's saying. He's not, cursing or MFing the officers. And, he very easily drives them up simply because what is he said, but there's some ego involved. And I'll honestly say that I think a lot of these, we're the problem, okay, first off. Secondly, it does go back to training. I support that with Izzy. What is your First Amendment? What is your Fourth Amendment? What's public property? What's private property? What can be filmed? Where can it not be filmed? And I actually have some experiences with this from my department, that having to counsel some officers that got wrapped up in one of these. And it was, just as we have spoken in the past, Dan, it's name badge number, okay, anything else? All right, hey, be careful, have a good day, and move on down the road. The ones that attempt to provoke and push the buttons, and then, when they get into the officers are doing everything that they should be doing, and they start cursing and, calling them out, that rises to another level. I mean, it's First Amendment audit, but it's not First Amendment audit. It's an attempt to provoke an illicit behavior or an action. I've seen a few of them, those I have an issue with. But again, I'm going to go back and say a lot of these are because of us, because we don't know what we're doing when we make that contact. And the reason I say is, let me put it into context. That incident that you just played, I don't know how that came about. I don't know whether they found him on their own or whatever. But a lot of the time, it's going to be somebody called in to 911 or the non-emergency number and said, there's a person out here filming. Okay? So we have to respond, okay? We have to find out something. And I know people will argue, well, you don't have to respond. Well, I think that in your community, depending on what your community expects of you, I think your community is going to want you to respond. But once you find out exactly what they're doing, when you make that contact, and this is where we say, hey, you okay? Yeah, I'm sorry, we're filming. I should know what's public property, what's private property anyway. I mean, so I shouldn't even have to ask that question. If they're out there videotaping on the sidewalk, okay, well, somebody called in on you, they're concerned about you being out here. Name, badge number, Devlin 101. Anything else? No. All right, have a good day. And be gone. And that's what we're training the officers, what Izzy's talking about with NYPD. I looked at some of their training as well about the cameras that are coming out. One of the other things I don't understand is, and it may be state to state, because I know the body cam issue, that's been brought up quite a bit. Still kind of astounded that there are agencies that do not have body cameras. But I've been on camera since 1994. I mean, we had in-car cameras in 94. So every contact I've ever, so this is nothing new about being recorded. So I don't know why we act like we do when we already are being recorded. I mean, that's a new thing for some officers, and I understand that. But, you know, there are courses out there where they teach you how to play to the camera, especially us, you know, when we're investigating offenses and recording certain types of things. So, you know, the thing is officers need to understand what people's rights are when it comes to the First and Fourth Amendment. Here in Texas, I mean, you got to know about detention. He started talking about detention, right? What is detention? What's detention in your state? What's temporary detention in your state? They all have to be linked to a crime, some type of offense, whether it's a city ordinance or it's murder. It all has to be linked. And if you have nothing other than somebody called in on someone standing there, you don't have anything. So you make your contact and you kind of move on down the road. Get that ego in check, stick it somewhere else, and act like you would, like you're supposed to act on every single call or every contact you make. And you won't be the next internet star.
You know, Joe, let me ask you this. And I want you, Joe, to cover what we've covered so far. But when people watch these First Amendment auditors and you watch the videos, you'll hear them talk about RAS, R-A-S, reasonable, articulable suspicion. And one of the things that you'll always see them ask, which I think is brilliant that they do in many instances, is they'll say, well, am I detained? Yes. Well, why? Because you're suspicious. And they'll say, is that a misdemeanor or a felony? Is it a misdemeanor or a felony? And so if you don't have a crime, and the officer will invariably say, well, you're detained until I figure out what happened. So until you figure out what happened, I can't go anywhere. And that's where a lot of this knot really comes in. Joe, help us out, brother.
Let me just first start off the morning with, I disagree with it. Let me just start there. But I will say this, that if you look at this First Amendment auditor stuff, I mean, if you look at the formation of newspapers, I mean, that's really where this is. The freedom to gather information. The problem I find with most policemen is that they fail to, as you say, reasonably articulate. And what happens is we get caught up in our own mythology. Let me tell you what I mean. For instance, the poem says, I'm with the press. What's a gotcha moment for a lot of police? You're not the press, so let me press that issue. You know, so they become the narrative focus, and rather deal with the larger issue, they'll focus on the one narrow issue, which is not there. Oh, you're not depressed. Let me show you why you're not depressed. Therefore, I don't have to respect you as a president. And there lies the problem. They don't know how to back out and say, wait a minute, hey, maybe I made a mistake. For me, I could see where a lot of people get frazzled. A lot of policemen get frazzled because, again, they don't know how to articulate why they took the steps they or did the things that they did. For me, my past job, the last four crime scenes, I've always had someone with a camera going live on Facebook saying, oh, what a horrible job these police are doing, but that's their right. As long as they don't step within my crime scene, I can't do anything to them. Now, the other problem that you have is when they invoke this, I'm with the press. No, you're not. But even if you were, you still don't have the right thing on my crime scene. And that's where, again, we go back to a very basic point. Does the press have any more rights than the normal citizen? Yes and no. But, again, the fact of the matter is we're talking about persons that have, in this day and age, the right and the ability to film. Not going to get around that. Police have to be trained and understand that there are rights and privileges that are built into the Constitution that they cannot violate based on what they believe or their interpretation of the Constitution. And that's really about it.
Wait, so what do you disagree with me on?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I was forgetting.
He's been gone for so long, yes, I got to say, come on, man. You can't go.
I do
go away this long.
I am interested in that fact where the kid identifies himself as a member of the press, and that did make me cringe a little bit. So I was like, just because you have a camera in your hand and you're filming somebody doesn't mean you can be like, I'm press. That's not
Let me ask you, since you are a member of the press, You know, and I look, I'm not taking anything away from somebody.
In this type of journalism.
Well, yeah, it's true. That's what I was going to get at. You know, normally when I deal with members of the press, it's you know, like, you know, can you call me, right? Or hey, can I come out? You know, we want to talk about this particular incident. You know, and it's normally we don't get the people jump out of the bushes. You know, oh, gotcha. You know, this that type of stuff. But I think it's interesting to hear from you as an actual member of the press. What's the difference between you and somebody that has a camera out there? And I mean, I think I know what the difference is, but you know, I don't know. Do folks that are in the media, in the news, do they cringe when they hear that?
I mean, we're right now in journalism and in the media, there's an evolution happening, and there's a lot of discussion going on around it about these quote-unquote freelancers or free-form journalists that are these people that are just – the social media is changing everything. So, like, when the riots happened last year, when Ferguson happened and everything like that, a lot of the information that started getting shared around was on-the-ground stuff from people with social media accounts. Major media were actually going to these people to try and broaden the perspective of the story and get a better idea of what was happening. And that's increasing. So now you have a lot of people that are, some taking it more seriously than others, some not, that the simple answer to the question is I don't know right now. Like, it's very complicated right now. Like, because technically to identify yourself as a member of the press, you have to be working for a publication, in my opinion. Like, you have to be, someone has to be picking you up. You have to be writing. You can be a freelancer and be a member of the press, but you're there for somebody. It's getting vague now, because now you have people that are starting up their own publications and their own blogs and stuff like that, and they are going out and they're doing the work and they're reporting and they're recording and stuff like that. So it's, in my opinion, I would not identify myself as a member of the press unless I had a publication.
I guess my question is, and this is seriously because I just don't know, is there like a general code of conduct? I mean, I know with the reporters that I've interviewed with, their employer has a code of conduct, like a code of ethics. But is there just like a general for news media? I mean, when you went to school to get your degree, you know, is there something along those lines that says, you know, you're supposed to operate within this box, you know, like for integrity and for whatever? I mean, I that's just a general question.
Integrity?
There is.
The I word?
What?
Integrity? Media integrity? Really?
It's all tied up with, like, First Amendment. Like, you can't talk, like, there. You have to make sure that you're not causing any undue harm. You have to make sure that you're not committing slander or libel. You have to make sure that you're not, there's like a certain amount of effort to try and maintain an unbiased perspective, though now things are changing because journalists are becoming activists as well, which is really clouding it up. So the answer is yes, there is kind of a general code, but it's a little muddy.
It's changing and evolving.
It's getting a little, but it is getting a little muddy, especially now that you have people who are journalists who are also activists, which I've spoken to people that are like, either that's a good thing or a bad thing. I kind of lean, I'm undecided at the moment. I don't really promote activism journalism. It seems kind of contradictory to me. But, it's kind of money. There's no, like, other than, like, the First Amendment provision and stuff like that, depending on who you work with, there's no, like, set in the ground laws, so to speak.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. So let's ask this question then. With the onset of these First Amendment auditors that we're seeing everywhere that have popped up and they're all here, let's explore, why are they all of a sudden here? Because most progress usually comes from something. People aren't getting a need met. Something isn't happening. They want to do something different. And we went from taking the police work on everything. And for those who want to condemn First Amendment auditors, I have to say that there used to be a time where we took the word of the police. That's just the way it is. And we're finding out today that oftentimes that word wasn't as good as we thought it was. Things didn't happen exactly. Right, but things didn't happen the way they said it happened. Not in every case, but in some cases. And one is enough. If you're that one who's sitting in jail for 25 years, that's enough. So you had the police, we said, well, we're going to come up with dash cameras. For us old-timers, we remember when the dash cameras came. And they were a whole damn 8-millimeter video camera in some cars mounted up. You know, you couldn't even see traffic crossing. But and it showed the police are willing to document inherently, certainly not every officer, but we're going to be truthful on this show. We all know when they said we're going to do dash cams, there was a segment of officers who wanted to know, how can I get around that dash cam, disable that dash cam? They're there. Why would you want to get around that? And there were some who used it. And then we went through where the citizens were video Rodney King, which I would say was actually, to me, the first successful audit of police. Had it not been for that Rodney King video, we never would have had the Rodney King conviction. Never would have. Never would have, because nobody would have believed Rodney King after he healed up first and posted bond or did his jail sentence and came out. I'm not against videoing. I think officers should be videoed in as much as we video civilians. And for people who have a problem with cameras, most of the time, you're being videoed wherever you are. There are cameras everywhere nowadays. Everywhere. Big John, what do you think?
Yeah, first of all, she stole my question, and I wanted if you could find what the press is. But the thing that I guess that kind of like bothers me, well, I won't get into what bothers me. Let me say this part. I think that the reason why there's a growing number of, I'm not going to say it's the so-called press, is because for so many years, the police have acted like as if they are above the law. Now, there are large groups of people that are able to check them, right? So just think about this. Cop shot, hey, get over here. Okay, he's demanding, he's telling you this, and you're subjected to his abuse. What this audit thing has done is basically put a lot of police officers in check. And some, I think, go overboard with kick rocks, get out of here. Take them off the shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's their way of showing some authority back to the police. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're still here. We're waiting on you. We're
okay.
Here, bro.
It's kind of like the public's way of showing the police up, who basically have acted like they're above the law. So I think that's the rise, because a lot of these people, man, they basically, it's the same question. Some people are going out initiating this, which is where I told you, Stan, that I had an issue at. Because the problem I foresee is some judge is going to sit on the bench and say, you know what, these people are basically trying to harass the police officers. How can the officers do their job? And I got these people out here, and we're basically legalizing them to do this. And there's going to be some judge that make a ruling, and then some Supreme Court, appellate court, uphold that ruling. So it's one thing is to do what Izzy does, and that's to be a journalist. And there's another thing to just go out and just to try to prove a point, because some of it is not trying to show John Ruffin that you have certain First Amendment rights, then you have Fourth Amendment rights, you have this right. Some of it is eagle tripping and ball swinging. I can piss further than you, officer, and that's the problem that I have.
Sure, John, and I'll agree with you, but I got to go back to training, and I got to go back to the training I got toward the latter part of my career where this became actually something that you saw, you know, out there more and more. You know, officers, we deal with crap, dude. I mean, nonstop. We do. We just deal with a heap of crap, and people, it's easy for folks to say, well, that's what you signed up for. Well, I mean, you know, you can go from a fatality accident to a child rape to maybe a boring day, whatever the case may be. But then here comes this guy, and I'm not talking about all the auditors right now. I'm talking about the asshole. You're coming out of the police department. You're just trying to get this three-year-old that was sodomized out of your head and get out there and answer your burglary calls and do whatever, because contrary to popular belief, we don't get to go, Sarge, that was a bad call. I want to go home. Yeah, take 2 weeks off. That's bullshit. That's TB. That does not happen. And a lot of officers, biggest thing is, am I going to get to eat today? Anytime. Not sit down and eat. Just get something and eat in the car. So you got all that stress on you. Then here comes the one jerk who's that way. And those are the auditors that I have a problem with, that curse the officers out, that name called them. They're there for that reason, to badmouth. They don't want to do anything positive about the city or the police department. They want to invoke a reaction. Those, to me, are not auditors. They're predators. That's Stan's opinion, and if the auditors don't like it, you know, I reached out to a bunch of them. They didn't want to come on the show or didn't respond back, but that's fine. They can't. There are some of them that I like that are positive, that will say, this department, at the end of their video, this department gets a B, gets an A. I like the way this officer did this. I like the way this officer did that. And I'm for auditing because before video, before officers were being videoed, there are so many incidents we wouldn't know about had it not been for video. Whether we want to talk about Tamir Rice, whether we want to talk about Ahmaud Arbery. You know, there are so many things that would work for citizens getting a video and saying, I'm going to capture what is happening and let the courts figure it out. Because our videos, oftentimes, depending on the calls, let's just be honest, sometimes we lost that video. We can't get it. We can't download it. We can't. So I would think that an accurate recording of an incident, minus some of the back talk, some folks talk too much during it, and they actually shoot themselves in the foot. But, I have no problem with officers being videoed. My former department, they used to tell us, assume you're always on camera. I had a body camera on. I had an in-the-car camera. There are cameras on the streets. There's cameras in the convenience stores. So officers have to get into this mindset of you're not being micromanaged. You know, you're being held accountable. And for the ones who step out of the boundary, when you know, you listen to these audios or you watch these videos of these auditors, and they say, I'm on a public sidewalk. Well, you can't film over into our parking lot where our police cars are. That's bullshit. They can film anything that they can see. If they can see it with their eyes, they can film it. And the one stream that I always hear is, what is all these threats against officers' lives, and we're being threatened, and this is happening, this, that's happening. I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but I got to say, I'm waiting on one of these officers or one of these auditors to say, do you know last year more officers died from suicide than citizens? How about that part? Before my camera comes across your fence to violate your space and make you feel insecure, how about you sit in roll call and talk to the guy or the woman next to you and figure out what's going on with them? See,
that's my question, actually. So how did we get to this title of police auditors? Because honestly, I got a little bit confused in the beginning because I thought we were talking about the guys that handled the consent decrees. Now it sounds like we're talking about like a kid on the street with a camera. How did that get the title of an auditor? Like, I'm all for, in this day and age, it's definitely been proven that you should have a you should be filming if you get stopped or something like that. At this point, it's a protection. Like, it's not illegal. Like, do it, film it, record, and everything like that. But how does someone get the title of an auditor? Is it just by them going out because they're a person who goes out decides to just film police?
You know, I think what they initially did is they went out to film, not so much film the police, because they'll film security guards and everything else, but they wanted to see the system you have in place that you say works. Here's the Constitution. So I'm going to do this now and see how you react to it. And so they considered themselves, I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm not speaking for them, they were auditing the system you have in place. And so that is the general tag to where if you Google these people, First Amendment auditors, you're going to see all these videos will come up. Some are good, some are bad. Some of these guys are jerks. Some of them are really, really good. But,
and
yes, sir.
The ones that I originally was seeing were people carrying guns. And they wanted to show that.
The Second Amendment auditors you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I those were like the initial ones that I think. But I want to ask you a question, and maybe Joe, one of you guys probably maybe better answer it. We talk about these videos. Because people make videos, you know, a court has to authenticate the author of that video. So how many of these videos are actually admissible at a trial?
I say all of them. I mean, you got to.
I would disagree.
There's such thing as,
I hand over you a video, right? So you give a video to the court. That comes in as hearsay evidence, right? Because that's not direct evidence from you. So what I'm curious about is how is that considered, like, as far as admissibility in a court? And I think that it would have to pass certain tests to pass the exception to the hearsay rule.
They would bring you in. Remember, this is just like a theme, not to pay too much attention to the Rittenhouse trial, but I know that they have one individual who, I don't know if he's a member of the press or who he is, but he videotapes that particular incident, but they put him up on the stand. That was the authentication of the video. So I think that would be the legal process in bringing you in. We couldn't take it. Well, I mean, if it came in anonymously, then and we just couldn't figure out who sent it to us or where it came from, that would be a different issue. But, you know, if you reached out to Joe and said, hey, I got this video of this particular incident taking place, well, we're going to take your name and your information and, you know, say John Ruffin is the one that presented
Suppose I want to remain anonymous.
Well, then that'd be, I don't know about other states, but here in Texas, that'd be an issue between you and the DA, and there's probably not going to be much of the opportunity for you to remain as an anonymous person.
Well, I think that will be the difference between is he being the press and versus the freelance people who, you know, they got filmed and you don't know, like Izzy was talking about certain oaths. I think Stan brought up taking a certain ethic oath that Izzy is held to where you – these other people who are freelancers, there's no oaths there. There's no oath
in journalism in general. I never took an oath. There's none. There's no oath. And it's a very gray area in terms of what constitutes what you can get away with and what you can do, especially nowadays. I don't know if these auditors can be called freelancers. What they're doing seems inherently antagonistic, and I don't know if it's a journalistic pursuit. Because like it's meant to inform at the basic level, and you're trying to inform. So I guess what they're doing does inform. I've never watched really a lot of these. Like I saw the Second Amendment one in Texas where the guy was walking around with a gun on his back and he's black to show that he can't walk down the street with a gun on his back. That seems seem to have more of an inclination to inform. But there is no oath in journalism. So none of these guys are violating an oath of the job or anything like that. I just don't know how much of it is on an actual mission to inform and educate, as opposed to some of it sounds like what would be called gotcha journalism.
But you know what, Izzy, and we got a caller we want to get to, Claire's about to come in. But you know what, I mean, and this is Stan. At some point, I don't have a problem with gotcha journalism because to a degree, everybody can independently judge whether it's a large degree or a small degree. But to a degree, people have been under the thumb of gotcha policing too. And a lot of them have been put away for a long time because the video gotcha. And then we find out that there was a problem with the video or this person or DNA or whatever. But I think to me that, you know, I have my biggest problem with some of these auditors is when they provoke the police. And when they go out there to just stir up a shitstorm and piss the officer off for likes and clicks, those people are not auditors to me. They really don't serve a viable reason to be there other than their own personal gain. That aggravates the hell out of me. But at the same time, I become equally aggravated at the officers who you watch these videos. You can see the point in the video where they quite clearly do not know what they're talking about. But they stay there and argue out of, Izzy, you said it. They argue out of ego, and the video now goes on for 40 minutes. The entire department looks like crap. The city looks like, and they will tell you they're right even after the sergeant comes and goes, he or she can stand on the sidewalk and film anything that they're allowed to see. Those few, and yes, it's not a whole bunch of them, but those ones, and that's the problem with policing. We don't want to address the ones that are doing it, and not just to punish them, but to say, why did you do this? Well, I didn't know. Okay, now we need to do training, department-wide, not just for that officer. And that's where policing fails. We're going to retrain this officer, and that's going to solve our problem. No, the officer clearly got that from somewhere. It's called pattern and practice. In many departments. And I think some of the good auditors are saying, and you hear them say it, you don't know what you're talking about. You need more training. They use that word training more than the officers do in the videos. And the sergeants, I wouldn't want to be a sergeant today. It used to be a time where you were a sergeant, you might have got called out to a scene two or three times a shift. Of course, you're going to go to murders and rapes and stuff like that. But, I mean, when an officer would call and say, I need a sergeant, that was two or three times a shift you came out. Hell, now it's every damn call because the officers clearly don't know and have talked themselves into a corner because, as you say, EGO, get back in your car and leave. The hell with your feelings. You're getting paid. Just leave. Claire, welcome. Good morning. Glad you made it. Talk to us.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I had some technical difficulties this morning getting on, so I apologize, but I'm here now, and I've been following along on Facebook Live, so I'm caught up. I'm up to speed, I believe. So a couple things. I agree, unlike Joe Mosley, with Izzy, that...
He could not always disagree with me, though.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true. Yeah. There was no real argument, so there wasn't much to be on Joe's side about. But I agree with Izzy as far as what the media should be allowed to do and their rights as far as their press and there's one point that I wanted to talk about that I also agreed with Izzy on, the fact that the mix-up between whether he was the press or not, or like a part of the people, I wanted to clarify that too. What exactly he meant because I don't know that I disagree necessarily that he isn't part of the people, because if you do like Facebook Live, that is live streaming to people. So I guess what is your realm of understanding on that?
Time?
Yeah.
I don't know. This whole world is not something I get involved in. Like I said before, this is not the type of work that I do. So I don't know where this. Technically, you can argue the moment that you are in a situation and you are recording it, you're a member of the press. Like the girl who filmed George Floyd getting strangled, getting choked out, is a member of the press as soon as she started recording. That is, there is one realm of thought that says that. I don't like to get bogged down in journalistic philosophy, so I don't know. But there is that realm of thought. The moment you are recording, the moment you are filming something and sharing it with posterity, you are the press.
Let me ask this before I go to a caller. I want to ask this question. Since we're talking about the press versus the citizen, and, you know, for me, I look at the very basic difference in the two. The press brings me, we talk to this person. The police department gave us this footage. This citizen gave us this footage. We've sat down and viewed it and regurgitated, and we decided what you'll see and not see. We decided how we'll present it. Now, let's look at the citizen, the auditor, whatever we want to call them. Oftentimes, nobody called them on the phone and said, hey, get over to 9th and 37th Street. This is going on right now. That auditor usually is there and catching everything as it is happening, and you're seeing it in real time. So I think, and for me, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, but I sometimes view, whether it's auditors, citizens, whatever we want to call them, Facebook Lives or whatever, some of those videos have more credibility than a hell of a lot of press interviews because it's been massaged and gone over. And we go, and to people who say, well, I don't understand where Stan's going, you have no problem taking police body camera footage, which is real time, and allowing that in court and going with that. But if Claire or Jim or Joe is standing on the corner with their cell phone, recording the police, recording the incident, we have an issue with that. See, that's the semantical bullshit that when we talk about transparency, and this is why I'll say I'm an advocate of auditors, not all, not the asshole auditors, but the act of citizens videoing, not just the police, but the incident. Because had George Floyd's incident not been videoed, where would we be? You know, so there's a reason for it, Chief. I see you. I know you want to come in. Come on.
No, I was going to say, the George Floyd incident had not been recorded. We had never heard about it. It's just been another day. I want to make a point, and you know, I'm going to go back to the clip that you played, you know, and one of the big things that we've been talking about as a law enforcement trainer, you know, where's the de-escalation?
Hey, there you go. Right?
So we had this concept of de-escalating situations, you know, the mental health and the this and that and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a simple one. This is a basic 101 contact that once that conversation starts, and I apologize to the auditors, but as soon as I hear, am I detained, I know what I've got. Okay, all right, let's start backing down a little bit, de-escalate these situations. And officers need to really look at in that lens there. But it goes even further. You know, what law is being broken? Suspicion is one piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't provide probable cause of any sort, which you're required to have to make an arrest, right? It's got probable cause of a crime. So this is really, if you're called out there, it's because you got called from some citizen and you showed up and you're making a contact to find out what's going on. If you find this on your own and you see that this is taking place, all you have really is merely a hunch. That's not enough to hook anybody up. But what is the crime to begin with? You know, I talked about our conversation, Stan, about, you know, teaching this. This is something I knew that I put into the Academy for Scenarios, is having individuals show up that are filming the scene, right? To get the officers to understand that, you know, they can do it from a distance. There's no, we're not going to get them involved in it. There's no point in doing it. And the thing is, we de-escalate those scenes because there's even one where I bring one up, and they try to insert themselves into the scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, here in Texas, you got to know what the law is. You can film, but you cannot be within a certain. You can't be involved in the incident. You can't be standing next to me while we're getting involved in this. So you have to know the law. Then you got to be de-escalate the scene because the person gets irate and upset. They say that they're a member of the press, just as in your clip. You know, and you got to be able to handle the scene that you got, and then methodically handle this person over here. Trying to get officers to understand that, because that's real world life. That's what happens. And then the point, as you said earlier, you're on camera. We're on camera. We're all on camera all the time. I mean, you know, there's no telling about the amount of video with a Ring doorbell and Arlo and whatever else you have in your neighborhood, the convenience store. It's TxDOT cameras on top of streetlights, not that they record, but you're on camera. Everywhere you go, you might as well just expect that that's happened, no matter what. But I wanted to bring up that point about that de-escalation, because we didn't even talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Because had he followed the proper protocol and what would be considered true form of de-escalation, that video would have never happened. It may have happened, but as you said, we got the A. We give this officer an A for handling the situation and moving on down the road. But again, the officers have got to know what the laws are, what they can do, and when they can do it. That there's no two ways about it. And if you're a cop and you're listening and you don't understand the Fourth Amendment, you need to go back and take a class and go back through it again, because that's the bread and butter of what we do.
All right, let's go to a caller real quick. 314 area code 4600. Good morning. I think I know who this is. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, Stan. I got a question. And being that your topic is on the First Amendment, and this applies to police officers. In Norfolk, Virginia, I don't know, you probably read the story, but maybe not. You had an officer by the name of William Kelly, who was fired by the city manager, Chip Fowler, for him making a donation to the Rittenhouse Fund at home on his own computer and no ties with the city at all. So what's your feel? I think that is really overstretching, that you are not allowed to have a private life as a police officer. And I think it's deplorable. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'll speak for myself. I think that policing as an institution has gone too far in controlling the personal lives of officers who are not committing an offense, who in the general orders that are written says that their conduct or their actions brought discredit upon the police department, blah, 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 blah. You know, I think that has been an overreach, and I think that overreach comes from within police departments. You have demographics of people, I call it a good old boy system, where majority rules. And if you offend that majority, Republican or Democrat, then the hammer drops on you. And everybody else tends to, when the hammer drops, everybody else falls in line. Nobody comes to your side. Nobody speaks out. I give two squirts less about Kyle Rittenhouse and his dry tears. That's Stan's personal opinion. But when I go after that officer that donated to his fund, no, that's his decision. I brought a pair of Nike in support of Nike supporting Colin Kaepernick on my off-duty time in my own personal vehicle, and that was Stan's choice to do. I don't, what everybody else thought about Colin Kaepernick or Nike or Black Lives Matter or all that's not my point. I'm making a donation to an entity that supports something that I happen to believe in. And that officer, to me, and I'm not a legal scholar, I would take that city out of the frame. I don't like Kyle Rittenhouse. That's Stan's personal opinion. But I absolutely back that officer and his right to be able to put his money that he or she earned and send it to whatever cause they want to. If it does not bring discredit upon the department. Go ahead, Chief.
Did he say it was the chief of police that was fired?
No,
it was a beat cop the chief of police name is Larry Boone. Matter of fact, he's African-American. But the city manager, you know, many municipalities still under city manager, Chip Fowler, he fired him because somebody hacked the fund and revealed the names of the contributors. It would have got my name, too. But and it doesn't matter who it is. I've seen them do the same thing on the Salvation Army because somebody got an ink of it because this is sort of biblical based. But as Stan said, I think it's deplorable. It was a city manager. It wasn't the chief of police. But chief of police did fire him, go along with it, or with the city manager.
Well, then, let me ask you this.
I would say, and there's actually a difference between the chief and an officer. I'm glad we got that clarified because the chief is actually would be even easier to let go by that in that particular instance. I'll just say right now, I don't know much about the laws in that state as far as employment, but he's going to get paid.
And Bianchi, let me say this, and this is where I'm glad you brought up that example because this is where the self-serving division politically and geopolitically is going on right now because you'll have some people who, like myself, I don't like Kyle Rittenhouse, but I acknowledge that officer's rights. But people get so embedded and entrenched in their camps that they don't see what's happening. And what happened to that officer, I believe, was wrong, regardless of how I feel about Kyle Rittenhouse. Now, I would support that officer 1,000%. I would support his right to spend his money on whatever the hell he wants to spend it on, 1,000%. But I don't think America is that forward-thinking to be able to say what happened, because what happened to that officer can happen to me or the chief or Claire or John or Izzy or Joe or anybody here. So, you know, we have to be able to look beyond our prejudices and our biases and our opinions and look at what actually is happening. You know, what happened to that officer is wrong. Will he or she get the support they should get across the board? No, because everybody's in their little camps. Well, I don't like Kyle Rittenhouse, so screw the officer. He shouldn't have done it. No, it's his or her right to do it. So now we're talking about a rights issue, not a likes issue. So I agree, Claire. I see you nodding.
I got one more question for you.
Yes, sir.
In New York, I've seen videos where citizens would come up behind police officers walking the beat and dump a bucket of water on them. What's your opinion on that? And I'll take your answer on mute.
For me, and Chief, I'll let you handle it, but if it were me, they'd go to jail for assault.
That's assault in the state of Texas.
They would go to jail instantly. Instantly. Because, you know, there are problems with policing, yes. But when we go too far to the left and we allow people to assault or humiliate these police officers and the officer can't react and the citizen gets to go on and be a world star or YouTube, that's bullshit. And I know I did that job, and this is going to be my opinion, and people can disagree with me. I know what it's like to go out there and see the worst stuff human beings, whether you're black or white, you all, we all like to say we're Americans. I have seen for 25 years what you are willing to do to each other. And oftentimes, you don't even leave your house to do it. You kill your wife, your kids, the dog, the goldfish, and you're waiting on a neighbor to check the mail. But the officer's wrong. That is a problem. We have to start holding individuals in this country. I don't give a damn if you're black or white, gay or straight, black lives, blue lives, Republican or Democrat. You start holding people accountable for their actions. Just like those of us with children, we do our children. What we did to the 3-year-old, we did to the 5-year-old. And America has subdivided into a camp where we get preferential treatment and we decide, is it politically correct for me to speak out against this now when this is the issue I speak for? I speak for police reform. I absolutely do. I think policing is broken along with the criminal justice system, along with the prison system. I'm an advocate for it. But when they're right, I'm going to stand up and say they're right and I'm going to support them in this avenue here. And when the citizens are wrong by Stan's opinion or my observation, I'm going to say, this guy or this lady can go kick rocks. And I think that's what's missing in America today. Nobody wants to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't have time to worry about hurt feelings because I spent 25 years looking at hurt bodies and people dying. Don, I see you fidgeting, brother.
I got a question. So I also see videos where the officers try to snatch the camera out of people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Is we still talking assault here
mm-hmm.
with the officers?
Absolutely.
Are we willing to arrest the officer for assault when they grab the camera out of someone's hand?
You know what? I think absolutely that should happen, and I'll tell you why I believe that should happen, because had that premise or that concept or philosophy or forethought that you just espoused here, had that been placed into human practice in America today, George Floyd might be alive, because somebody would have knocked the shit out of Chauvin when he was killing the man. I absolutely believe when officers are out of control, when officers begin assaulting citizens, is the citizen supposed to take an ass with it? The way it stands right now, if they defend themselves, it doesn't matter what 6 months later happens in court. If they defend themselves, they're going to jail for assault on a police officer, and they're going to spend 6, 7, 8, 9 months in jail. And it's, God forbid, if you're in New York and go to Rikers Island, you might be in there for 3 years before your trial even comes up, and then we clean it all up. The system needs... It's mutual respect. I think officers take a lot of shit from citizens they shouldn't have to take. And I think we can all say, well, that's your job. That's it. No, it's mutual respect. And I also think that citizens have taken a lot of shit from officers that they shouldn't have had to take. So somewhere we've got to reach a point where we look at what you're saying, John. You know, if you're grabbing my phone, my $1,000 iPhone.
I want to hear Steve and Joe's response to that question.
Excellent.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, if you don't have a legal, if you don't have a legal reason to touch anybody, now, I mean, you're under arrest. That's one thing, right? I told you you're under arrest, and I'm taking you into custody. I have every right under the laws to use force against you to bring you into custody. There's the force necessary. But in an instance that's a consensual contact, and you're over there trying to reach for somebody's phone and take their camera away, That's a violation. Not only is that assault, that's a violation of their civil rights. You're attempting to take property from them. You don't have a right to take. Now, are the DAs going to prosecute? No. Could we take up the arrest? Could we do it? Yeah, we'd probably hand it off to the Rangers to show the transparency portion of it. At least have someone up to the criminal side while we do the internal. Now, could the internal remove the person from service? Yes, definitely.
But now,
whether a district attorney will decide to prosecute, that's a whole other matter. And I'm just going to say this up front. Many, many, many years ago when I started this business, I remember hearing a comment from a district attorney, and it probably holds still pretty true today, is that one of the hardest people to prosecute are police officers.
You know what, Batif, I'm not going to disagree, but Miss Carol Horn in Buffalo, New York, she was an officer at the time, and thank God she struck out against an officer who was abusing a citizen, assaulting a citizen, and she was fired for it. Now, it's been, I believe, and don't quote me on it, you all, but 15 or more years. Now, all of a sudden, they've gone back and looked at everything and found that she did the right thing. Now, this is what really amazes me with policing. This is why I think we have auditors. We can put complex murder cases together. We got a murder expert, homicide expert right here. We can do all of that. We can weave in conspiracies. We can put together RICO cases. We can do forensic stuff. We can do all of that. But it took 15 years, and that's just my estimate, y'all can Google it, for them to go back and look at what she did to stop this officer who was out of control, and, oh, now we're going to give you retirement and pay you all this back. That is the stuff the public has a problem with. I think that's why auditors are there, because in saying, you know, you have all this capability, but you're not doing You're not putting all those resources in place consistently to protect the citizen as much as you're putting it in place to convict.
Hey, Stan.
Yes, sir.
Matter of fact, in that case, this the black female officer, and they had a white male who was abusing a suspect. The officer hit her. He struck the lady.
He absolutely did, and he was never arrested for it. Joe, I see. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say, that department, just, they didn't believe it. They didn't care about it. They didn't want to put forth the effort to hear her story or even conducted a minimal investigation into it from what I read on it. So it got lost in the mix. They didn't want to get involved until the public information about that bail officer started to come out.
Right.
That's when it started to take that turn.
But, Chief, what the danger in that is that we're not talking about Waco or Hewitt or Woodway or some little small department somewhere. We're talking Buffalo, New York. We're talking about you have a substantial budget. There is no excuse. There is no lack of money coming in there, especially at the time this happened, because we're sitting in the middle, you know, getting ready to walk into the crack cocaine epidemic, where asset forfeiture and all that was there. And I know we're getting away from auditors, but all that was there. And so, I mean, if it can happen in Buffalo, why are people amazed it happens in Harvey? It happens in Waco. It happens here. It happens there. It can, and I think that's where America needs to understand. It's not a matter of a geographic location in reference to policing. It is a matter of the profession needs to be overhauled. Profession does. It does no good for Hewitt to have their program on point if Waco and China Spring or whatever, if they don't, because you're going to get the backlash from it. So it's something we as officers have got to sit down and decide to do.
No, and it does. I mean, that's been in the 27 years that I've been doing this, that's been traditional. You know, I mean, there's a major incident happening several thousand miles away, and, you know, we get asked about it on a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, what are you talking about? That has nothing to do with us. But, again, I go back to the individual officer and the de-escalation situations, and you said it earlier about that mutual respect. But respect is earned. I mean, that's just a given. It's an earned event. I mean, I can't expect just because I walk up on somebody wearing my shiny uniform and badge and cool sunglasses that they're going to respect me. That's earned. It's earned by action. It's earned by conversation. It's earned by what you do when you do it. And that's what a lot of the officers need to understand. There are a lot of good cops out there. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of good we use cops, we use police officers. Cops are something else. There are a lot of good police officers out there that earn that from their communities every single day. So, you know, let's go back. Let's find out how they're doing, what they're doing. And you know, that's at least an idea of where we need to start and how do we put forth this effort. You know, I'm going to circle back to John's question. You know, yeah, it's a violation of the law. That's an assault as well. Somebody attempts to do that. You better have a legal reason, right, like an arrest to put your hands on somebody. That's just the bottom line. You can't take people's property away. It's an illegal seizure unless you've got a reason to do that. And a lot of instances, I'll say that people resist simply because they don't understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't been communicated that they are under arrest, right? It's all of a sudden we put our hands on them and throw handcuffs on them, and that's when people get freaked out. So, you know, we teach a lot of that in the DT portion as well. So, yeah, I agree with you, John. It's hard, difficult situation for the profession to deal with, right? And there's not a lot of places that are going to do that. If they're doing that to citizens out there, and they're doing it under the color of law, and they're doing it illegally with no probable cause or reason for arrest, then it's an extreme violation.
Let me ask this, Chief, to you and Joe real quick. And then, John, I want you to answer this, too. Because I want to get these three varying viewpoints. And, Claire, you're young, and I want to get your – I think in watching the, and I literally watch 50 to 100 of these videos a week. I don't watch all of them all the way through, but I watch it. I find a snag word in it that the officers really don't seem to have a firm understanding of, and the citizens either don't or they absolutely 100% do. And it causes the state to go, is the word detained. You are detained. Joe, help us understand, what is detainment? When can it happen? Why does it happen? And what is it?
I think you need to talk about the idea of what an arrest is.
Mm-hmm.
When each one of these become apparent, one is you're taking, actually it's really based on what the person feels, according to the courts. If the person themselves feel they're being detained, they are. The courts have said that. They've ruled on that. It doesn't matter what the police officer says. If you restrict their movement, however you do that, whether it be a car door or handcuffs, it is. And that's what the courts have said. But more to the auditors, going circling back to the original topic, auditors, look at some of those videos. The idea that these people, citizens of the United States, have rights. That, let's just get that, that's reality. They have a right to film. The idea that they have to use or have to press the issue to guarantee their rights is part of, how the fabric of this country. I mean, it says, the definition is people that are using this to film police on public property. Well, they have that right. I mean, that's the reality of it. And policemen, by the virtue of them having a gun and a badge, cannot infringe upon those rights. Something the chief says, and we've said it before, and I totally agree, by the virtue of you having a badge and a gun does not mean you get respect. The problem that we have here is that officers don't understand that you have to give the citizens their respect. No matter if there is no discussion, there is no they have to earn it. You have to give it. Now, is it reciprocal? No. Is it automatic? Definitely not. But again, the understanding, and it goes to another key word, common sense. But if common sense was so common, we wouldn't be here today. I think we all can agree on that. But the issue for me is, again, being filmed. Everything everybody says is correct. The idea that common sense really comes into play. You don't come on film and start cursing people out because I've been in some high-stress situations lately. And I had to catch some of my guys and say, look, man, that's just not right. But again, I digress because I keep going back to my favorite word, common sense. Do you train common sense? Can you teach common sense? Sticky situation. And everything that we're talking about, de-escalation of people's rights, again, it goes back to how does this all begin? How were you raised at home? I mean, how do you interact with other people? And I think that a lot of our coworkers, our other police officers, fail to realize you don't want it done to you. Why would you do it to someone else?
Yeah, I was going to found on the detentions, so you have full-blown detention, you have temporary detention, you have full custodial arrest, so you need to know where you're at when you're in this contact with an individual. And there are certain times when it is best to even explain what you're doing and why you're doing it. So particularly in a temporary detention and temporary detention, this is across the board. I can hold on to you for all the time that I can account. I say hold on. I can detain you for the time that I can account while I'm investigating a crime, right? As an example, you're in an auto parts store at 3 o'clock in the morning. We get an alarm call, the window's broken out. We find you in the general area. Okay. You're not technically free to leave until I can hold on to you while we conduct this investigation into this particular offense to see if any of you are involved. Now, one of the things that I teach this in class is you as a citizen are not required to technically identify yourself in a temporary detention.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ask for your identification and you say, I'm not going to provide it. Okay. So that's it. That's it. That's the end of for temporary detention. But if we develop probable cause that, we got a shoe print or glass in it at the bottom of your shoe or something to that effect where the window was broken out, well, then that takes it to another level. Then we've got probable cause. Now we're waiting for the owner of the business to show up, right? Excuse me. Then when we get to that point and watch the video and it's you kicking in the window, well, then that becomes a full custodial arrest. Now you're required to identify yourself. So again, that's a law enforcement version of that, right? And so teaching that to officers and trying to explain that to them, where you're at, and I, you know, I wish Billy were around, because I believe that some of that transitory changes back and forth based upon the investigation, the information that you get. But deed officers, brand new folks, need to know that. Officers need to understand that, right? And that's very important information, because then if you violate that, then A, you lose your case. B, there's potential for civil rights violation. So, you know, it just goes on and on and up and up and up. So, you know, what Joe said is 100% correct. If you're of the feeling that you're not free to leave, then you're detained, right, at a minimum. There's even cases out there where people said that they felt like they weren't free to leave, and it's a full arrest, right? So, you know, again, it really depends upon that individual. There's drug interdiction cases where people, I know we're getting way out, but consent to search. You know, they felt like they had the consent to the search during this the interaction, because there's 10 officers at this one traffic stop, right? That was on the person. It wasn't the officers doing anything, but they felt like they had to. So, again, this information is very important for the B-level officer to know, right? And I keep seeing more and more officers that apparently don't have this information, or they've forgotten it. This is stuff that needs to be repeated over and over again, because this is what we do every single day, right? This is part of our job. We're like miniature attorneys. We just don't have the degree that goes behind it. So you have to be smart in the context of what you're doing. And in those contacts, you know, you've got to respect the folks. You've got to give them the respect that's due. Is it reciprocal, like Joe said? No, it's not. Often the time it's not. If you're, you know, if you don't like the police, okay, I get that, I understand. But I still have to give you the respect that you're due, and we go about our business, right? So we take it back to these auditors. That's why I said, you got to know the law. You got to know what you're doing when you make contact with the individual who's filming. There's nothing, absolutely 100%, nothing wrong with filming the police. Like, in an example, my department, you can come in and film the lobby all you want. You can walk around the parking lot. You can film wherever you need to. The only place that you cannot film is behind that front door, which is under the Criminal Justice Information Security, FBI, State of Texas. It's a secure area. There's just no video recording allowed back through there. And it's posted. So, you know, again, is it public? Is it private? Knowing where you're at, how that all interacts and works, it'll save you from being a jerk on video.
I hope if people don't take anything else from this show, maybe they take what you just said and disseminate it across this country. Because I watch at least 100 of these videos a week, at least 100. Not all the way through all of them. One of the biggest ones that I've seen that has spiraled out of control, made departments look bad, is somebody standing on the sidewalk filming the police department parking lot. When you said that, you actually said two things. That is probably 60% of the negative videos I see the police get in reference to auditors. The other one that you hit on is ID. Officers who immediately jump out of their car and approach a citizen and say, give me your ID. And when the citizen says why, here's the big legal reason. Because I want to know who I'm talking to. Well, so do I. But then when they ask the officer, what's your name and badge number, this is what they get. If you walk close enough to read it, you're going to get slammed and handcuffed. I was in fear of my life. See, that's the ego thing. That's the semantical bullshit. Claire, I see you laughing. And your generation, talk to me. Am I wrong?
No, it's the truth. That's why I'm laughing. It's ridiculous. Like, we don't, I mean, if talking about ego, if there were an officer that said, let me see your ID, and somebody handed out their ID and said, here, look, I mean, their ego would shoot through the roof and they'd be pissed off, just as pissed off, but they think that this isn't doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're being childish. It's the exact same amount. I mean, just like you said, it's respect. If you expect someone to hand you their card, then don't do this to them by, here's my name and badge number.
But
that's why it makes me laugh, because it's ridiculous.
Let me circle back to something that John asked a little earlier, or the statement was, would they charge a policeman? In the last 6 months, I guarantee you'll see a lot of law enforcement officers have been charged. In the city of Chicago, less than a month ago, a off-duty sergeant had a car stolen while shopping. Allegedly, the story was she fired a couple shots at the person. The car was found later on with three or four juveniles. She was charged with a felony. Listen to what I just said. She was charged with a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Officers are being charged. By the virtue of them having a gun on, it raises the charge to armed violence. Doesn't matter what it is. The fact that you have a gun on raises the issue. But if you're asking, or your statement was, would they charge an officer in these days and time? Definitely.
So I think agree
on that definite thing, but it's happening.
It depends on where you are now. You come here.
It depends on where you are. It depends on who you are. It depends on what happened. It depends
it
on
is happening.
Not getting convicted is like
you didn't say convicted. You said arrested.
Charged and arrested.
Okay.
It's not happening on like a consistent enough basis to say definitely. I would not say
it depends on where you are. So come here and check it out.
Joe, I think that we're talking differently here. You're talking about a cop pulling a gun out, so on. I'm talking about in some of these videos, you'll see some officers are so aggressive that they have tried to take the camera, the phone from out of their hands. There's some cops who back up, and instead of just having you back up, they're pressing their chest up against you. That's an assault. Those are the ones who are not getting charged.
Absolutely.
And that's the ones that I'm talking about here.
You know,
I'm not talking about whether or not police officers get arrested or not. I'm talking about the police officers who attack people who are trying to audit or become somewhat of the press or media, whatever you want to call it. But those are officers I'm talking about. Will they be charged? And the answer is absolutely not.
Let me do this, John.
Not.
Great point. We're at the 30-minute mark.
Hey, Sam.
Come on.
Sam, I wanted to ask the officers on this panel, because you were talking about detention. And I recall an incident, and I won't go into too much detail, where a friend was brought into custody. And it almost was like a big riot thing with blocking police. And the sergeant said, yo, look, I'm going to bring him downtown for about a half an hour, 45 minutes. There was one guy that instigated everything. He said, I'm not going to charge him, but I'm going to bring him in to cool off. You can come get him, and somebody down there, come pick him up. And they brought him in into custody. Now, he never got arrested. Isn't there such thing? The question that I'm asking, isn't there such thing as a detention that requires you bringing in the individual without being charged?
No, that's an arrest to me. If the person does, if I don't want
to have an arrest,
right? But I know he wasn't charged. But you asked me, but I'm giving you my answer is that if Stan does not want to go with you, it doesn't matter if you mean well and you're willing to do this because you think it's in my best interest. If Stan does not want to go with you, but yet you take me to the station to cool off, technically, I'm arrested.
You're not free.
That's right. I am not free.
So you come across someone who's pissy drunk, but technically he really committed no crime. You bring him in because
we're not babysitting community. No, John.
Isn't that a form of detention?
No, we're not babysitting.
That's arrest.
So in that
instance right there, I mean, and I can only speak for Texas, that, you know, we have the ability to bring somebody in, arrest them for public intoxication because they're intoxicated to the point where they are a danger to themselves or others.
Mm-hmm.
That's an arrest. There's paperwork that goes along with that. They're in custody. There's not a babysitting or a monitoring.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Or even consent. I mean, the only way that would happen, John, is if you know, let's say me and you, right? And I say, hey, John, you know, let's get this situation under control. Come with me down to PD. Hang out for 30 minutes. Let's get you away from this scene. The only way that that's going to happen is you say, yeah, let's do it, Chief. Let's go. Other than that, if you come down, I say, hey, you got to come with me. You're not free to leave.
That's right.
So by the pure definition, you're under arrest.
Well, explain this to me because I'm confused.
Real quick.
If I call and say, hey man, listen, my roommate has been drinking. He's been, you know, moonshine. and you, by law, you can bring a man to sober up.
No. Because Izzy, your roommate, you said the word my roommate. That is Izzy's house. He has a right to be there. You cannot be publicly intoxicated in Texas in your house. That's your house. If you want to get drunk and pee on the floor and throw up, that is your house. Now, if Izzy assaults you, we have a domestic disturbance in Texas because both of you live under the same roof. It can become a domestic violence case. But just because I'm drunk and peeing on the floor and throwing up in the bathtub and John doesn't like it, the police cannot come and put me in jail or take me from my house because John is uncomfortable because that is also my house.
I think John, real quick, and I believe you 100%. It probably happens where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely 100% believe exactly what you're saying.
Oh,
but not under my watch. If you're coming to PD, you're either coming on your own because you just want to,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you're in custody. That's it. There are no two other ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are no two other ways. Because, again, think of it in the opposite. That guy comes down. He's technically coming down there to cool off for a little bit and then turns around and says, hell, the damn police make me go to the police department. There's no paperwork behind it. You know, that's a violation of civil rights.
And there's a video of you walking in.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I understand that probably happens in a lot of places, you know, but you're either coming on your own or there's a charge.
And John,
no two other ways.
And I've done that with people. I've had people that I knew in the hood where the situation is heated, and I said, man, come over here with me. We may walk two blocks away. And they come with me, and you know, this is where we talk about community policing, and I don't want to go all the way down that rabbit hole. But these people trust me. They didn't come because I had a badge and a gun. They came because they know me, and they know what I'm doing. I said, you need to get away. Come talk to me. And I can then talk to them away from that. Yes, they're free to leave, and they know they're free to leave, but it's kind of that mystical area. They choose to stay because they trust me. I get what you're saying. I feel what you're saying. I can't say, well, if you go back there, I'm going to put you in jail. If you go back in your house, I'm going to put you in jail. You can't do that. And I think we see it. We've seen it done. And it's because what we do here, citizens don't know any better. And when you know better, you do better. Real quick.
You were talking about the escalation.
Yeah, that's the purpose of moving them is de-escalation. But I'm saying in the example you gave, the person says, no, I don't want to come with you. We can't say, well, we're going to put you in jail because you didn't come. We can't do that. If they're willing to come with you, we're still kind of like Terry Stop. We're still kind of, you know, just talking. But if I say, John, you need to come with me to the police department and you're going to come down here and cool off, you're not free to go at that point. If you get in that car, you're saying, I feel like I'm not free to go. And I think that's that slope that we're going down.
Well, and just to add to that, that instance there, you know, that example Stan uses, you know, and John, the de-escalation part of it. And let's say that was an option. Hey, come down, let's come down to PD and cool off and you tell me no. Well, then again, the good officer's got to start thinking on the fly. Well, he don't want to come with me. All right, so now we got to figure out how to continue the de-escalation of this major incident so it doesn't erupt into something else, you know. And again, informing you, hey, you continue on down this. Now, I agree with Stan. Hey, you'll come down here, we'll put you in jail. But, you know, if you and I are in contact and there's a major issue happening, like you explained in your area, you know, if this continues to happen, there's a good possibility when I come back,
and
you're gonna have to come.
And John, what doesn't happen enough in these incidents is, number one, we're being paid by taxpayers. Well, I'm not. I'm retired now. But, you know, we're being paid by taxpayers. If John says, I don't want to go nowhere with you, you call Joe. You call Claire. Do we, A, look at if John goes back, what can happen? If we call Joe and Joe picks up the phone and says, I'll be on the way, give me 15 minutes. If that calms it, maybe we never know, would Joe prevent it? Or did we call Claire? Or are we worried about the overtime? Are we worried about this or that? So you're right, because right now what you're hitting on is in that community policing vibe. I may get a shit bag. This guy is a scumbag, absolute scumbag. He don't want to listen to Stan. But I call John and say, John, I got one of your people over here. You need to come talk to him, because if not, this is going to go bad. I made the call. Did it solve the situation? John has more influence over that person than Stan does. In the scenario you gave, Joe may have more of a personal identity with you than Stan does. Are we willing to go the extra mile?
Stan, so is it fair to say that if the officer failed to de-escalate in that situation, where you could have brought that person and said, hey, look, I'm going to bring you in for an hour or two to cool off. If you don't do that, and that person turn around, God forbid, kill up 5 or 6 people in that house, should the city now be held accountable?
No. My thing is not on stand. It's not on stand.
De-escalate that situation.
I don't, John. Here's the thing. You didn't say, I can de-escalate on scene. But to me, for me to say, I'm going to take you and babysit you at the police department so you calm down so this doesn't happen. I say, do you have someone I can call? Your brother, your family member? No. It's not the officer's responsibility to go into everyone's personal situation and say, and I'm just using the example you gave, I'm going to now babysit you for 30 minutes. I got a whole beat of problems out here. So you feel better. No, the police department should not be liable. We respond to problems. Some we can solve, some we can't. But no, I believe, I say this. If I ask you, John, you're pissed off, do you have somebody I can call? If you don't have anybody, why should I babysit you?
Yeah, I'm just saying, the big thing is, John, legally, we just can't.
Yeah.
There's just not a law that allows us to do that. Maybe there's something up there. I don't know. In my state, there's not a single stinking thing that legally allows me to do that.
I also feel like there's, to an extent, like you're responsible for your own mental health. So if you're intoxicated or whatever your other influence is, you can't, like, expect the police to show up 5 hours earlier and then expect this to go down when 5 hours ago this de-escalated on scene and there was nothing else to do. But then 5 hours later, you go shoot up everybody else. Well, at some point in those 5 hours, your mental health was up to you, not me.
Let's do this, because we're at the 20-minute mark now. I want to go around the horn and get really, as far as First Amendment audits, what works, what doesn't work, what can we see more of, what would you guys like to see less of, you know, what do you think? I'll say for me, and I'm going to be done with it, I'm just going to say I support First Amendment auditors that are polite and considerate, that are well-versed, and treat the officers with respect. And I think that filming the police should not be an issue, because we've had no problem as police filming people. And we don't walk up to your car and tell you, I pulled you over for running a stop sign, and I want you to know that you're on my dash camera and you're on my body camera. We see more citizens having to ask the officer, is your body camera on? And why do they consistently ask that? Because a lot of times it's not. So, you know, for me, that's my answer on it. We'll go around the horn. Who wants to go first? You guys pick your own poison.
Well, I'll go first. I posted something on the chat. Educate employees, don't overreact, identify and mark non-public forums, consider rules about harassment, and before adopting any specific regulation, the municipality should consult with its attorney. I put it up on there so that's that. But the body camera thing is really an administrative issue with a lot of departments. Some automatically come on when you activate the lights. Some come on at the officer's discretion. I think at this point, as soon as you answer a call, these things should be rolling. That's my opinion. So that's where I'm at. As far as First Amendment auditors, they're not going away.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it. I mean, put some big boy pants on, pardon my language. Grow a set and get ready. But the other thing is this. Understand that your relationship, your fiduciary relationship first is to the people you serve, not the servicing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And until a lot of people get that right, police officers nationwide, we're going to be stuck in this quagmire. I'm out.
Whoa, Big Joe. Who's next? Is he taking notes? Is he look like he's taking ass at it? Claire. Talk to us, Claire.
I was distracted by John's dog. I think there's a lot of good points brought up today. I apologize if I offended anybody by what I said. I think that de-escalation needs to be harped on more in the academy, especially with where we're at today with filming and stuff, especially not because it's going to be tested on, but because of what happened to George Floyd, it does need to be touched on more because maybe you're not going to be tested on it and graded up on it, but it's obviously it does happen and is continuing to happen. So there needs to be more training on that, but also more whistleblowers are, if there is a problem, then there needs to be somebody to address that problem. So therefore it does need to be taught in the academy what is right and what is wrong, even if you're not tested upon it in TECL. So that's pretty much what I had.
Let me ask you this, Claire, real quick. Since you're the youngest and the freshest out of a police academy of all of us, did you find that things that you were not tested on in the academy, you were immediately tested on in the street in real time?
Well, I think that there's so much to cover in such a short period in the academy that you can't possibly cover every single subject, and it's really difficult to, even if you try. So a lot of the things that maybe weren't covered completely were addressed as soon as you hit the street because you felt like you weren't completely trained in all those subjects, and one of those being what to do when a camera is shoved in your face. And I think that, I had a conversation when I saw what the topic was this week with my partner, and I think that, she said that if there is a profession where there are problems, then why wouldn't you be recording it? Officers are recording the public, so the public should absolutely have every right to be recording the officers as well. That's transparency. And if we're going to talk about transparency for police departments, then why wouldn't we be able to record police interactions? I'm not asking to record anything, any files in the back, but because officers also can't record that back there either. So nobody's able to record that. So if you're going to talk about transparency all the way through and through, then there should be no problem with recording in the public.
All right, Big John.
Yes, I see this as there's a whole lot of good here, and then there's some bad. And I just hope that the people are able to decipher who's really there educating and who's just there to agitate. I think Izzy used the word agitation. It's sad that, police officers are – you got 5-6 cars that got to go to a call because some dude want to go with an AK around his back, around his neck. in front of a police station and people calling in, or he wanted to go walk in front of a school or something, and Clyde Park got to respond to that because he wants to educate or prove a point. I think that's wrong. And, you know, there's a better way of educating, and that's not it. I say leave that job up to Izzy. He does a great job.
All right, bro. With that, dig in.
Thanks for that, John. I mean, one point I'll make to what Claire finished off with in terms of there just needs to be more training and everything, I wholeheartedly agree. It's almost as if these people aren't trained for long enough on the right thing. Almost as if this training period isn't long enough. Maybe they should get more training in the common hairstyles. That's crazy thinking. I don't know. But aside from that, I'll say when it comes to auditors, journalism aside or educating aside, I think they are necessary. And I think that policing as an industry and a culture has kind of brought this era of antagonistic, conflict-oriented journalism on itself. I think if you want to stop having people shove cameras in your face and question what you're doing all the time, maybe do a better job of not doing things that require cameras being shoved in your face, me being questioned all the time. I think auditors are important because we like to talk about common sense, we like to talk about training, we like to talk about ethics and stuff. When I sat through academy classes and through the work that I've done, I can tell you that things like that are taught, but they are taught at a whisper to the roar of policing culture and the hero identity and the glory that you're going to achieve and the how great you're going to be and everything. That clouds out all the common sense, ethical, service-oriented stuff. It really does. And until we're going to switch that dynamic, we're not going to really change anything. And that's why auditors are necessary, because so much police misconduct, as we've seen from these videos, is happening in the open, but it still has been happening in darkness because cops aren't used to being filmed by these people all the time. So you're catching things that otherwise wouldn't be caught, and they might not be right all the time, but they are necessary because in my experience, they shed light on those things, which those things then lead to conversations about much more important, not more important, but much more complex issues that policing are facing and much greater misconduct that auditors themselves can't shed light on. Nobody running around with a camera is going to shed light on the stuff that cops who rape people. An auditor is not going to catch that because that specifically happens in darkness. No one's going to catch the misconduct and the whistleblower retaliations that police suffer. They're not going to be able to catch that on camera because that happens in a level of darkness that they're not going to be able to reach. But what they're doing does lead to conversations about those things. So I think in this day and age, unfortunately, that we're experiencing evolution, what journalism is, what coverage is, and these are going to be the norm, and they are necessary until we start seeing the accountability and the common sense that is demonstrated on this panel and in demonstrated departments and police with police officers around the country. You just don't see them that much. But until we start seeing that on a broad scale, this is what we're going to have, because it's being proven that policing and police departments, unless they have a camera in front of their face, unless they are being 100% scrutinized, unless they are being forced, they are not changing anything. No police department has just out of the blue been like, you know what, we're going to fix this stuff. They do it under pressure every time, and that's what pushes the envelope. And like Stan said, Rodney King kicked it off. The OPD wasn't going to change anything if that video hadn't come out. Nothing would have changed in that. They have to. They will only do it unless they're forced. So unless you start doing these changes willingly, police industry, you're going to have cameras in your face.
All right, Big T.
Well, after hearing Izzy and the hero mentality, I feel like I should have some glowing stuff on my books right here. I agree with Joe. This is something that we are that's going to continue. But from the law enforcement perspective, it's training our personnel, and again, I'm going to go back to the rights and upholding those citizen rights, what you can do when you're approached with one of these, what you're not supposed to do, You know, and again, it's really not much more than a consensual contact in most instances if an officer finds it. Because, you know, again, what is the level of suspicion? But, you know, I'm going to tell folks that, you know, you've got to understand your rights. You've got to learn what your rights are. Do not take them for granted because they're absolutely 100% important. And you need to know that. And I'm going to transition a little bit into with Claire and what is he talked about, the academy. I mean, I teach it. There's just not enough time. There's not enough training that takes place in the initial basic police officer academy that can sustain you for a very long time. And I think if you go back and you look, individual officers taking training upon themselves, that's what produces decent officers down the road. And then hard lessons learned on the street. When you're wrong and you get caught on it, that seems to make an impact. But the academies, basic academies, continuing education training, none of it is long enough. I think we've seen that. We know it. There are some things in place. When Claire was talking, I was just thinking about her academy because I taught her academy. But, you know, and the system that it's in falls under the college, under a college, and there's a limitation on how many hours you can have before it has to be an actual accredited class, like a normal English class. I think that's stupid. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's an old, stupid law under the education code that, you know, limits an academy to 720 hours. Why are we not talking about 1,600? Why are we not talking about 2,000? Why are we not talking about 2,500? That's what we need to be talking about when we're talking about that training.
Absolutely.
That way, these things that we're talking about can be incorporated into that academy, and they can not only be incorporated, but then they can be tested upon. I'll tell you right now, I said in the beginning, the scenarios that I run, the ones we were talking about on this, they're not anywhere in the academy. I made them up because it's real life, real situations that we see on the street. There's not a question about it. There's not a testing mechanism. There's no quiz behind it. Your performance based is what I measure you on, and we try to pass on good, solid information on how to deal with those types of issues. I agree 100%. As a trainer, as a chief, the academies are not enough. It's just not enough. And then when you talk about continuing education training across the nation, man, it is so different from state to state that it would blow your mind. There's certain states require nothing. Once you get out of the academy, you don't have to have anything. There's states, not that I think that we're the best, but, you know, we've got, a requirement, 80 hours per training cycle on specific items. And then depending upon your level of licensing, what you're supposed to have, and asset forfeiture, racial profile, and cultural diversity, and stuff like that. And I still think that it's not enough. But, you know, you get into an issue of balancing, put people on the street and train, but there still needs to be way more. And I see Claire's got her finger up, so I'm just going to shut up there.
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah, real quick. I just wanted to say that I think what you're on to, Chief, is that 720 hours is the difference between training an officer and educating an officer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to say. I think that if you multiply that by two, that's the difference between training an officer and educating an officer.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And that was profound. I'll say this to end the show. To the auditors, I want to say to you that when you go out and shove a camera in a cop's face, when you go out there and your purpose is to just provoke something, a person on the other end of that camera is a human being. You don't know what he or she just left. You do not know what they just saw. You're at a traffic stop. They worked a multi-car fatality 3 hours ago. You don't know what they see. They're human beings. And if you're out there and you're concerned about human rights and human respect, give them a little bit of respect. And that's to the negative auditors, not to all of them. To the police. You know, the ones who think all the auditors are troublemakers, and you're just out here to give us a hard time. Look at your own institution and then say, did we give them a reason to be here? We, personal opinion, we
absolutely did. Not only have we been non-transparent, we haven't always been truthful. And what has been written in our reports didn't line up with what's been on street cameras. So I think both sides have a valuable reason for being there. Officers learn to be quiet. When you get there, sir, ma'am, can I help you? No. You don't need it. Why are you filming our police department from across the street? It ain't your police department. It's taxpayer dollars. They're on a public sidewalk. They have a right to. Suck it up. That's the way of the world. What's your name and badge number? Give it to them. Get in the car and leave. Don't get into a debate. With that, I appreciate everybody being here. Anybody want to give a final thought before we get out of here?
Yeah, one thing. To Joe and Chief, you both said that respect is something that's earned. And I say to anybody listening that everybody should start out with respect for someone.
Absolutely.
Now, what is earned is whether or not you maintain that respect. But when I meet Claire, when I meet Izzy, when I meet anyone, we should all start out with respect. And it's our duty to continue to earn that respect.
There you
or
go.
Lose that respect. I agree. That's it.
That part. Big John, take a bow, man. Let me see you bow.
I can't, man. Too much weight. I go over there. I'm like,
anybody got any final thoughts? We're going to get out. Facebook has been blowing up. Appreciate you guys over there. Claire, glad you made it.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it.
She's so
good. Good show. Good show.
All right, we're going to get out. Joe, appreciate you, brother. Chief, appreciate you. Izzy, as always, we're going to get out. Y'all have a good day, and we're out. Peace.
Peace.